and this is Fireside Chat. We have a wonderful guest for you today. I'll tell you a little bit about him. His name is Steve Behrman, and you might not know him by that name, but he is an internationally known author, humorist, and workshop leader. For the past 18 years, he has written and performed as Swami Beyondananda, the cosmic comic. Swami's comedy has been called irreverently uplifting and has been described both as comedy disguised as wisdom and wisdom disguised as comedy. As the Swami, Steve is the author of four books, Driving Your Own Karma, When You See a Sacred Cow, Milk It for All It's Worth, Duck Soup for the Soul, and his latest, Swami for President, a seven-step plan to heal the body politic and cure erectile dysfunction. Swami's nationally syndicated spoof advice column, Ask the Swami, along with his comedy performances, have found a wide and appreciative audience. In the past life before Swami, Steve started an alternative high school in Washington, D.C., and co-authored a book about his experiences, No Particular Place to Go, Making of a Free High School. A political science major, he later taught history to auto workers at Wayne State University in Detroit as part of the weekend college. In 1980, Steve co-founded Pathways Magazine in Ann Arbor, Michigan, one of the first publications bringing together holistic health, personal growth, spirituality, and politics. That's quite a feat, folks. The Swami was a regular comedy feature in Pathways and helped launch Steve's career as the cosmic comic. Having spent his formative years in Brooklyn, Steve earned a black belt in Borscht Belt and has won numerous Irony Man competitions. He currently resides in Santa Rosa, California with his wife, Trudy. Welcome, Swami.
Wow, that was a long way. That's a long introduction. And the Swami and I are both here, just so that you know. He may pop in from time to time.
All right.
Pop out.
All right. So
the magic of radio, we can change costumes instantly.
Oh, that's good. That's good. You know, I first became familiar with you. It was your 10, I think it's the 10 steps to enlightenment? Or
yeah, the Drive Your Karma, Curb Your Dogma guidelines to enlightenment.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I think probably everybody in the world is familiar with that line.
Yeah, it really did circulate for a while. It's one of those viral things that, actually, it's a good virus to catch.
Yeah, very good. How did it all start out?
Well, you mean this lifetime or past lifetime?
Whatever you want to talk
about.
Okay,
well, you know, we'll keep it simple.
Okay.
We'll start this lifetime. The simple story is I got struck by lightning during a brainstorm. And I was starting a publication called Pathways Magazine, which you mentioned earlier.
Uh-huh.
And my friend and I were looking for something to lighten up the spiritual path. We were doing a magazine for people interested in the spirituality and personal growth and health and so on. And particularly, you know, the spirituality and in diets and so on. People took this stuff awfully seriously. And so We realized that to bring true enlightenment and perspective in there, there needed to be humor. And that's why the Swami was born.
Wonderful. Yeah, I agree with you totally on that one. You know, especially these days, there's a lot to be serious about. And, you know, the more serious we get, the more we also need to have humor interjected into our lives.
Well, you know, one of the causes of serious condition, as the Swami said, is serious conditioning. So we are conditioned to be serious, and that's serious.
Yes.
And, you know, it's not to trivialize things that we humans go through, but to have the perspective of humor, we get to see where we have put the mistaken emphasis, where we have actually taken things and turned them upside down and made them more complicated than they are. And you know, in Swami's recent State of the Universe address, you know, Swami, he does a television, you know, like, well, I have a vision. Let me tell you my vision. My vision is, how about this? How about young people living for their country instead of dying for the country? How about think tanks where they think about more than tanks? Tanks, but no tanks. Okay. Listen, I know what you're thinking. The Swami is proposing a sane world. He must be crazy. So we have that. You know, we have such an insane world that we live in.
Absolutely.
That should somebody actually propose something that's sane, that person would be put away as crazy.
Well, they did that about 2,000 years ago, didn't they?
Well, I think that there is always the perspective of the dominant paradigm, whichever that paradigm may be.
Yes.
Which tends to want to preserve itself at any cost to anybody else. So the dominant paradigm will defend, will fight to your death.
Yes,
it's survival. So it's not an uncommon thing that happens. So we're in a similar situation where we're about to make a really big. You in the questions you sent me earlier today, I know you had mentioned something about the Mayan calendar and the great shift, and of course the Swami said shift happens. I know people are asking, why is this shift happening to me? You know, so people take it personally.
Yeah.
And you know, again, I don't know for sure, but I do suspect that there is something to that, because we're at the point right now where we've the current paradigm, which is the religion of science or scientism.
Uh-huh.
You know, where the invisible has no if you can't see it, it doesn't exist.
Yes.
And there's a polarization into extremist religious positions.
Yes.
So what we need right now is something to integrate all of those.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's one of the main project I'm working on right now, is a serious book with some humor on the American evolution, the politics of the future, and how to get there from here.
Oh, wow.
With molecular biologist Bruce Lipton, who's the author of Biology of Belief.
Wow.
And the good news is biology tells us that everything we're doing now is wrong.
Really?
You know, we're acting as if the material world really exists, and it's really the only thing that exists. And you know, when physicists go down to the atomic level, lo and behold, they find out that at the atomic level, there's nothing but energy.
Uh-huh.
No particles, just waves. They only become particles when we look at them.
Yes.
The other thing that we've been that we believe that that's not true is in the Darwinian idea of the survival of the fittest.
Oh,
biology tells us that cooperation is what creates survival. That each the reason why the first organisms came about was because the cells couldn't make it by themselves competing.
Right.
And the cells said, "Hey, let's share information." And lo and behold, you and I are communities of 50 trillion cells.
Yeah.
You know, and the heart and the liver don't argue with each other. Liver don't say, "Hey, the hell with you. I'm not going to clean your blood." And the heart doesn't say, "Oh, yeah, well, let's see if you get any blood for me." So clearly, on the cellular level, on the molecular level, you know, in the healthy body, there's cooperation taking place. Now, what's interesting about the allocation of resources, because, again, you know, you can look at the metaphor of cells and the metaphor of human beings just being cells in the body politic or cells of Gaia, the Earth.
Right.
Well, when you look at the cellular level, the economics of the cell is that all cells that do work are cared for.
Yes.
So if a cell is doing a particular job and it's spending all of its energy doing that job, it has food delivered, it has garbage collected, and it's kept in the loop, it's supported, and so on. Now, what's interesting is that the larger the job the cell has to do, the more energy it gets. So you can say that there is a merit system in the body where that which is doing the most, using the most energy on behalf of the entire organism, you know, gets more resource. But nobody gets to hoard that resource. In other words, the
Oh, right, right, right.
The stomach says, I'm going to hold on to some of this. Actually, the organism is what decides who gets to hold on to what,
where the
surplus goes.
Yes, doesn't it seem that there's an out-of-balance condition today that relates to what you just said?
That would be an understatement. We are so far away, we've gotten so far away from being connected to the earth,
yes,
that, you know, we're about to, we're one of these species that we're about to kill the planet. We're really on the verge.
That's what I think, too.
Tonight, I'm going to go see the Inconvenient Truth movie, the Al Gore movie. And I guess I wasn't counting on seeing that much gore. But apparently it's pretty gory.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Basically, the things that are happening right now because of human behavior and the fact that we haven't been willing, I don't think it's able, haven't been willing,
right,
to change it. And, you know, the time for blaming our leadership is done. Too late,
right,
to blame,
right,
the leaders.
Right.
If you go back to look at the Declaration of Independence, it says right there that we are the bottom line. We, the people, are the bottom line.
Yep.
And so if we allowed our government to be low-jacked by a gang of gold-collar criminals, I'm afraid it comes back to us. You know, we can only apprehend them. We can change the situation, but really it's our responsibility.
Absolutely.
And you know, we've had a revolution in this country. We don't need another one, but we do need an evolution, which is where we the people realize that we're the leaders we've been waiting for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really look up the line. We're the leaders. Hillary?
No.
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
Look up the line. They're not there.
No. It seems like there's a whole bunch of rotten apples in there, you know, and they are rotten. I mean, everywhere you look, it doesn't seem like there's going to be any solution that is feasible coming from on high.
No, it has to come from on low. Regrow America from the grassroots up. Yeah, and that's right. And what's happening is that the people who are in positions of power right now, the people who are familiar with homeopathics who are listening to this understand the term miasm. And a miasm is a persistent energy field that insists on establishing itself and staying established. So let's imagine that you're a young and idealistic teacher or doctor, and you go into the school or hospital and you're going to change the system. And then generally what you find is that 2 or 3 or 5 or 10 years down the line, the system has changed you.
Yes.
And so there is a persistent energy field of doing things a certain way. And there are persistent energy fields in our world, in our political world, that insist that we have to be Machiavellian, that we have to look out only for ourselves, that people are too stupid and too immoral to really understand the real situations that we face.
Yes.
And all of these assumptions are wrong, wrong, wrong. They're based on the wrong biology. They're based on habitual ways of thinking that have outlived their uselessness.
Oh, long ago.
Yeah. And so I guess I'm in favor of politics both inside and outside the matrix. So inside the matrix, if you don't vote, you're a fool. But also be aware that we also have to make sure that our votes are being counted. There is an article just came out today in Rolling Stone, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., doing a very deep and blunt analysis of the last so-called election.
Oh, yeah.
And saying it was stolen, folks.
Oh, yeah, it was a robbery.
And if we ignore that, you know, it kind of reminds me of the great Nasruddin story, the great Sufi story.
Oh, yeah.
Nasruddin is on his hands and knees one night in the parking lot, and his friend says, "What are you doing?" He says, "I'm looking for my keys, my car keys." And the friend says, "Oh, you dropped them in the parking lot." He says, "No, I dropped them in the bushes over there." "Why are you looking in the parking lot?" well, there's more light here. So the habit that we have, one of the reasons why we've had perpetrations like the election fraud and most likely 9/11.
I was just going to say.
Yeah, most likely that, is because people are really unwilling to understand what their eyes and ears and sniffer are telling them. That the truth, you know, nobody really wants to believe that our government in this country is basically devouring its own people.
No.
Nobody wants to believe that.
No, it is hard to believe, but
yeah.
Once you put the pieces together, it's incontrovertible.
Yes.
You know? And the awakening that seems to be occurring right now with people, it's the consensus is unanimous. That, you know, once you open Pandora's box, you get to see the whole thing. You don't get to just pick and choose. Well, I like this part of the awakening, but I don't like that part.
Good point. That's a good point. And there are all of these packages that are being liberated. There's the, you know, it's not an accident that the Da Vinci Code came out, movie came out in this past few weeks. And here we again we have these secrets, albeit in the language of fiction.
Yes.
But these secrets that have been liberated. And on the plus side, we have, you know, people now can practice various spiritual paths that had been, you know, only for certain level devotees in the past.
Uh-huh.
And at the same time, there are the dark side of some of these things is coming out as well. And we have to face that.
Yes, let's hope that that's happening. It does appear that way. It almost seems that the nation needs some kind of jolt to wake them up and that 911 was insufficient. You know,
well, 911 would have been a wake-up call had we had somebody of integrity.
Yeah.
And, you know, the more I read about it, in fact, I just, as part of my other stuff I did, I just wrote an article for the local Entertainment Weekly on David Ray Griffin, who wrote a book called The New Pearl Harbor about 9/11.
Oh, good.
And the article is called Unanswered Questions and Unquestioned Answers.
Oh.
A Non-Conspiracy Theorist Takes Aim at the Official 9/11 Story.
Huh.
And as a non-conspiracy theorist, David Ray Griffin, takes a look at the official story and says, if this story hadn't been given the halo, in other words, if it hadn't been anointed as an official myth that
right.
cannot be questioned, doesn't look like a really good story at all. Doesn't explain very much, and that certainly doesn't explain why none of the aircraft were intercepted.
No, and it seems like there's a wall of silence that is just, that not only has been occurring for maybe 10, 15, 20 years, but that it is even thicker than ever.
Yeah, Swami calls it the irony curtain.
Yes, I wish it was that funny.
Well, you know, and the thing is, it is, there is a wall of silence,
yeah.
And you know, what's been true is that the difference between our mass media and Pravda is that the Russians knew they were being lied to.
Yeah.
And we're just beginning to catch on.
Right.
But the good news is, as the Swami says, people are starting to wise up, and we could use a good uprising. So the uprising has indeed begun. And what that means is that people are beginning to face these unpleasant truths. It's
yeah.
not... it's not coincidental either that Al Gore's movie, what is it called, An Inconvenient Truth?
Yes.
Well, there you have it.
Yeah.
There's the elephant in the living room. That this is the result of what we've been doing, and we have an administration that's set to be in there for another 2.5 years to do more of the same.
Oh, yes.
So that's why...
and no doubt there's one waiting in the wings that's just as bad or worse.
Yes.
You know?
Yes, exactly. So, you know, we can't wait till this one is out of office. The proactive approach is impeachment. And I think that I would go even further and, you know, have a give our president a 50 million person vote of no confidence and ask him to quit.
Didn't you say
if you don't think that's powerful, it is.
Didn't you suggest we do an impeach cobbler?
Yes,
that was
for impeachment. Yeah, 50 million people asking him to quit. And that's what we need.
Well, we better do it before we're chipped. You know, we'll be sitting around with our chips and dip.
Yeah.
It'll be a little too late.
That's right. Well, I think that what's happening, though, is that people are, they're aware. And in fact, I just got this this piece from, you know, the Cato Institute. Are you familiar with them?
No, I'm not.
Okay. Well, Cato Institute is a right-wing libertarian think tank.
How do you spell that?
C-A-T-O.
Oh, okay.
You can go and find them.
Okay.
Cato Institute.
All right.
And I just got the Cato Institute report. It's called Power Surge, the Constitutional Record of George Bush.
Oh.
And
that must not have been a very long record.
Well, I mean, now these are the right-wing people, right?
Yeah, okay.
Okay. So here's their conclusions. Unfortunately, far from defending the Constitution, President Bush has repeatedly sought to strip out the limits the document places on federal power.
Uh-huh.
And here's what it protests. This is the right-wingers now.
Okay.
A federal government empowered to regulate core political speech and restrict it greatly when it counts the most. A president who cannot be restrained through validly enacted statutes from pursuing any tactic he believes to be effective in the war on terror.
Uh-huh.
A president who has the inherent constitutional authority to designate American citizens suspected of terrorist activities as enemy combatants.
Uh-huh.
A federal government with the power to supervise virtually every aspect of American life. And so on and on it goes, 32 pages.
Wow.
They don't call for impeachment. They simply lay out the case.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's the right wing.
This is the right wing.
Jeez.
Yes, indeed. The right
wing. Well, that's good news.
Yeah.
They've got some brains.
Well, you know, these are the people. You know, in fact, the article I'm working on now, the serious article about this, is called When the Right is Right.
Uh-huh.
And When the Right is Right, you know, again, the bird needs two wings to fly.
Right.
So what is the value of the right wing? Well, the right wing, in being true conservatives, remind us of our traditions. They remind us of the parts of our past that need to be preserved, and they protect us from acting too hastily.
Huh.
I mean, so that's on the good hand. So here they are. These are the Cato Institute people, and they talk about, they start out by talking about George Washington's oath of office that he took for his second term in 1793. It was a very short two-paragraph statement.
Uh-huh.
And he basically, you know, gives this solemn oath of office. And then the Cato Institute people say, fidelity to the constitutional oath of office should be a central factor in judging presidents.
Hmm.
Unfortunately, our modern political culture treats the oath of office as little more than a ceremonial exercise. These people are taking seriously that there's an oath of office.
Uh-huh.
What we have now is an oath, O-A-F of office. Yeah, you're under oath. Better watch out, that oath's going to get you. So anyway, so what I'm saying is that it's not making it in the papers, but genuine conservatives are alarmed. And that's why the Swami is saying people are waking up left and right.
Huh.
So it's time for left and right to come front and center. And what I mean by that is it's time for those of us who are ready to face the problems of the world and step away from our ideologies that have kept us limited and stupid.
Right.
Because if you already know everything, then you can't learn anything else.
Exactly.
So for those on the right and those on the left who already know everything, we just need to release that we know everything,
right,
and actually start listening to each other and finding together ways of doing what 80 or 90% of us think need to be done.
Oh, absolutely. That's wonderful.
So the problem is that you know, the current political manipulators to stay in office, and this is true on both sides, but especially true on the Republican side because they're so good at it.
Right.
You know, basically what they do and what they've done is to mobilize people on these issues that create separation.
Right.
You know, when I was a kid, we had a dog named Buster, and Buster was a great dog. And when my brother and I used to pretend to be fighting, interesting thing would happen. Buster would bark at whichever one of us seemed to be losing.
Huh.
Now, why is that? Well, you know, the dog's pack mentality. Because we have a deep pack mentality. That is different. The dog has the pack mentality.
Sure.
And naturally, the dog wants to see in the changing power relationships, he wants to make sure he's on the right side. So that whoever becomes top dog, he can, you know, be in the pack in a reasonable way.
Huh.
So I've noticed that since my childhood, I've noticed that that's really a key way of manipulating people politically. You get them busterized about a group or an individual who is lower on the totem pole.
Uh-huh.
You get them spending their wrath and energy and frustration on this group. And then you have both these groups arguing with each other, and while they're arguing, you steal their stuff.
Yep.
That's what we have.
Well, except we got no more stuff.
Well, yes, it's only phony money now.
Yeah,
we passed a very, very significant economic milestone. I don't know if you're aware of this, but this happened actually in the last 2 weeks.
What is it?
Wasn't in the papers.
Of course not.
The dollar is now worth less than the dollar in Monopoly money.
You're kidding.
Well, yeah, but...
Don't tell anybody. How on earth are they managing to keep the stock market floating?
Well, I don't know. I think...
Is that all the dead money that they
I
make?
Think it's all floating on belief, you know? Nobody really wants to, you know, nobody really wants to say, hey, I think I see the emperor's buttocks. Nobody really wants to say that.
Yeah, but the longer it floats, the more dramatic is going to be the fall, wouldn't you think?
Well, you know, it seems that a friend of mine was... he was a COO in a company out west here. It was a mining company.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, he's a pretty straight shooter, and he was just totally jaw-dropped, shocked at some of the executives, you know, preparing their golden parachutes. And basically, people looting the company.
Yep.
And jumping. Looting
absolutely.
And jumping. Looting and jumping.
Yep.
So... You know, the idea, I mean, that's what the Enron people tried to do, and they just were too bold.
Well, wasn't it the former CEO of Exxon that got out with $400 million in cash just to walk out the door?
Yep.
You know, that's just...
Yeah, that's jump change.
Exactly.
So what we have, and that's why, you know, Swami calls it gold-collar crime, and it's very, very serious. You know,
yeah.
These are people who are... You know, who are playing at the top of society, you know, and listen, I have nothing against criminals. I really don't. I love watching The Sopranos. But the only problem I have with criminals is when they're running things.
Exactly.
And that's kind of like having cancer run your body.
Oh, yes.
So you don't want criminals running things.
Yes,
and that's what we have right now.
I loved your analogy about the cells working together. And when you have this kind of division where you've got, you know, people that want to stay on top and who are hoarding secrets and money and power and then trying to get more of it, then obviously it's a disease-ridden situation for the society, which is, you know, the body of society.
Well, the host, in this case, the Earth.
Yes, yes,
there's everything being extracted and there's nothing being put back.
Yes,
and there's no, you know, it's really about balance of system, and the system has been... getting out of balance. It's been out of balance because for the last bunch of years, last 150 years, you know, there's been the gradual shift to believing in the religion of science.
Yes.
And interestingly, you know, 120-something years ago when Darwin published The Origin of Species, called it The Origin of Species, at that point, science had a creation myth. And so that enabled science to take on the role of a full-blown paradigm that explains everything. So there is science as creation myth. And so since that time, we've come to the point where only matter matters. So it shouldn't be surprising that money runs everything.
Yeah.
Because it's what we use in the material world to keep score.
Yes, absolutely.
And we've gotten that. And what's interesting is the materialism has gotten so insane, and I'm not remembering this scientist's name, but this scientist believes that our only purpose is to carry our genes so that our genes can send messages to other genes.
Huh.
So that's the extent of meaning of human life and human consciousness.
Wow.
So when you have a situation like that, is it any wonder that there is no moral authority to stop the most egregious examples of I'm only in it for myself?
Yeah, we're under an immoral authority.
Yeah, well, that certainly seems to be the case.
Yes.
So I know I went off on a political rag.
But no, you know, this is really important because people have to hear this stuff.
Well, it's part of waking up and understanding that, you know, for the 20 years during the 80s and the 90s and so on, when people developed inner peace and all of that and meditated.
Right.
There really was that feeling that it was the last gasp of I can get enlightenment for me.
Right.
And it's interesting that over the last several years, but particularly with the Dalai Lama and so on, there's been a resurgence of Buddhism.
Uh-huh.
And one of the ideas of Buddhism is the Bodhisattva, or Swami would say the Bodhisattva, where you adopt somebody as a buddy and you hang out till they get enlightened. but the idea is that in Buddhism we're really the suffering comes not from our individual pain in life, but from our separation from knowing that we're part of the oneness.
Hmm.
And that somebody else's pain or joy is ours.
Yes.
And so in the Buddhist practice there's this practice called Tonglen, where you breathe in all of the pain in the world.
Uh-huh.
And hey, there's plenty of it. So if you can find nourishment by breathing in this pain, what a great idea. And then you breathe out the love.
Huh.
Breathe in the pain, breathe out the love. Now, Swami calls that supply-side spirituality.
Huh.
Yeah, listen, we're not here to earn God's love. We're here to spend it. And we can defy the law of supply and demand. You know how?
Yeah,
be more supplying and less demanding. So if we turn ourselves into beings that are more supplying and less demanding, and I'm not talking about deprivation. What I'm talking about is understanding that just as in the body, those who do more, the cells who do more,
yes,
and not only more, but do more useful stuff. I mean, cancer
right.
cells do more too.
Right.
But to do more to keep the system going and enhance the growth and survival of this entity, in our human case, it's our planet Earth. Those who do more for that magically get more energy. They get more money. They get more resource. And it's based not on their ego, but it's based on commensurate with the benefit that they're providing. It's very economical.
Mm-hmm.
It's not communistic. It's not to each according to their needs.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone's needs are taken care of. All the cells' needs are taken care of on a basic level.
It does seem that that part of the awakening includes a shift from service to self, and it's going in the direction of service to other.
And understanding the wonderful selfishness in service to others. Because,
oh, yes.
The liver cell can go ahead and be a liver cell,
Yes.
And know it can do its liver cell job.
Yes.
And that it's going to be taken care of. So it can be totally aware.
Absolutely.
Totally aware. And it can be totally safe. It can feel safe. And, you know, I'm going to be a liver. I'm going to do my liver cell job morning till night. And nobody's going to pull the rug out from under me. By saying, I'm sorry, you've been fired.
And that's true happiness and joy.
Yeah, you've been, you know, you've been, what's the word that they use there? You've been, you've been replaced.
Right.
So that's, you know, I think that that's, once we have the awareness that we are, we can be very much like the cells in the body. That's how we were meant to be.
Right.
You know, one of the, I don't know if you know about fractal mathematics.
A bit, yes.
Okay, well, fractal, you can't create a world with regular geometry because Euclidean geometry only deals with lines and shapes and perfect figures.
Right.
But in order to deal with the mathematics of, let's say, a leaf or a cloud, you need fractal geometry, which works with fractions as opposed to whole numbers. And what happens is, and what you learn in fractal geometry, is that patterns get repeated, so that a leaf gets repeated as a twig, gets repeated as a tree. By the same token, the pattern of the cell gets repeated at the next level as the human being, and gets repeated at the next level as humanity, at the next level it's the earth. So there's the old biblical saying, as above, so below. So whatever we do on one level is being done on another level. So naturally, some of the same things that we human beings are doing to each other, we are doing to ourselves, the same kinds of illnesses. You know, and you can go much deeper in talking about metaphors related to the body. But the point is that there are these the patterns that we repeat over and over, and until we begin to understand these patterns, we are really not able to change them, understand them, and see the out-picturing of these patterns, see what we're doing, and decide, well, let's see, we don't have to, is it based on a faulty belief? Is it based on the belief that the only thing that matters is the physical world, or is it based on the belief that we're all connected? If we really understood that everything is connected, that we're all part of the same one, how would our interactions with other people be different? How would our interactions with the world, with our food, with political entities, how would this all be different? What would our educational system be like? I mean,
well,
either
it would be transformed.
It would be transformed. And at this point, you know, maybe it does take some kind of cataclysm or dogaclysm. might be more friendly. Maybe that's what we need to create dogaclysms. Where we all where we all just kind of, you know, get that you know, it's just puppy love here. Maybe that's what we need to counteract the cataclysm. We'll have to work on that.
Yes, that's a good one. I like that.
But anyway, you know, there are people who, you know, what does it take to make a change in an individual? Usually takes a significant emotional event.
Yes.
So we had one with 9/11 and took the wrong lesson from it. We were manipulated into
where they wanted us to be manipulated.
Where they wanted us to be. I think that 9/11 was the most astounding example of mass hypnosis and mass manipulation.
Oh, absolutely.
And, when, you know, waking up from that one, it's like the movie The Matrix. It's like coming out of The Matrix.
Yep.
And,
yep.
You know, and people, there's a natural reluctance to not do that, which is why the lie has been so persistent.
Well, yes, and they know that.
Yeah, however, if you think about the energy it takes to keep a lie in place, and you know, now that the election thing is coming out this weekend, there's a big conference in Chicago on 9/11 truth.
Wonderful.
I was not able to go to this conference, but it's a big event, and I'm sure I'll be able to report some good stuff that comes out of it. So people are beginning to understand that we're not in Kansas anymore.
Yes. Are you not also concerned that, you know, if people get too close to the truth, that another cataclysm will be manufactured to keep us looking in the wrong direction?
Well, I think that, you know, I mean, you can never underestimate what these people are going to do to stay in power.
Right.
So, you know, it's after Katrina, you know, there was all of those people lamenting, you know, look at how they, you know, they only did it because those were the black folks. And I said, you know what, to these people, we're all black folks.
Yes, good
So
point.
I think it's important to not have any illusions about that.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I really believe in the power of the field. And what I mean by the field, it's the invisible energy and thought patterns that cause things to happen inexplicably. And I think part of the reason why we've had some of the openings that we've had in the last year is because of people waking up, and that intensifies the field. So all of a sudden, a year ago, last summer, this Cindy Sheehan appeared out of nowhere. And she was the focal point of the, you know, switching the war from two-thirds for it to two-thirds against it.
Yeah.
Then came Katrina, an indictment of Libby, indictment of delay and lay. So what I'm saying is that if we did nothing else, rather than worry about it, just keep speaking the truth to people. That's all. Just keep putting it out. Just keep conversing.
Yeah. And the more that people hear things like this, you know, from rational, intelligent people such as yourself and myself, you know, the more credible it becomes. And doesn't it seem also that there's a cushion of love to fall back on when, you know, people are here to help and not to blame and criticize?
Well, I think that's the secret ingredient in why it's more likely to work now than it did in the 60s, is that there is a spiritual maturity that people have now that we didn't have 35 years ago.
Right.
And the spiritual maturity is similar to the spiritual maturity that a Martin Luther King had. And it's realizing that this is an issue that is an issue for all time.
Yes.
And you know, we've always been on the same team. All of us who are on doing this, we've been on the same team many, many lifetimes before.
Yep.
And we just happen to be at a very key period in the history of the Earth where we can't continue this way. We can't continue without destroying ourselves. And those people who've decided that the way they're going to deal with that is wait for the rapture, you know, we need to wake that. We need to bang pots, bang cymbals, and wake those people up.
Yes. Yep.
You know, Jesus didn't say, now don't do a thing till I get back.
Yeah.
You know, and these people, I mean, they've been.
Brainwave.
They're rightfully fearful,
yes.
But they're fearful of the wrong thing.
Yes, yes.
So I think that it's very, very important that we speak out as much as possible, because in speaking out, we find our allies. You know, when the Iraq War started, there was this whole thing about, well, don't talk to anybody because, you know, it might cost you your job, and, you know, people feel really strongly. And the reason why was that they didn't want anybody comparing notes.
Absolutely.
To see that, my God, none of us are in favor of this.
Yep.
And that was the case.
Yeah.
Very few people were really in favor of it. And so now, the momentum has shifted. And every day or every other day, I get something from the right wing that indicates that.
Oh, good.
Yeah, there was a piece I just got today from, who was it? It was just somebody pointing out 9/11. That's what it was. It was another Republican, guy named, let's see, who is this? Richard Andrew Grove.
Okay.
He once worked for the World Trade Center, AIG, and he's got a whole story. He's got a whole audio story of his take on it.
Uh-huh.
These things are popping up. They're popping up everywhere.
Well,
see what I got here. I'm just whistleblower Andrew Grove comes forward. So part of the uprising is that people, when there's enough buzz happening on the ground, when there's enough ground support, then people will come out and stick their necks out. The new Zoghbi poll that came out, you didn't read, this was not on any media, I guarantee it.
Okay.
But there was a Zoghbi poll. And this is a national poll. And it was done on May 22nd.
Okay.
And you can go to 911blogger.com and read all about it.
Okay. I'm ready.
And the Zoghbi poll said that 42% of Americans believe that it should be reinvestigated. 9/11 should be reinvestigated.
By an impartial. 42%
say there is a 9/11 cover-up.
Yes.
Should there be a new investigation? 43% say yes.
Wow.
How do you rate the media's coverage of 9/11? 53% say negative.
Yep.
Okay. So, you know, people are not as stupid as George Bush and Karl Rove would like to believe they are.
Yes.
And what's happened is that when all of this shakes down and we finally have some perspective, if we really want to look at the real villain in the mess, it's the media. They didn't do their job.
Well, they've sold out.
You know, and all of these, in reading the stuff from the Cato Institute, these conservatives, these, you know, right-wing libertarian conservatives.
Uh-huh.
And they're talking about the letter of the law and how specifically the letter of the law was followed and the Constitution was in the early days of our republic.
Uh-huh.
People took this stuff very seriously, and they understood that behind the Constitution, when all else fails, is the people.
Mm.
And that the people, you know, if there is some egregious wrong, there's certainly enough balance of power going on. But one of the reasons why we were given free press, it wasn't so that people could use the F word. We were given free press so that we would have the best possible information to make decisions on. And so free press has somehow become about using the F word.
Mm-hmm.
And I boldly use the F word everywhere. Fascism. And that's what we have to be careful of.
Yes.
That F word.
Huh. Well, have you heard anything about the various things that are going on as far as chemtrails and chemicals delivered into, you know, foods and water and various other places that are designed?
Well, you know, very interesting. I live in the Bay Area, and there was just a letter today in the San Francisco Chronicle about chemtrails.
Oh, good.
Somebody was saying, you know, why doesn't anybody investigate these? What are they? So at least it's been acknowledged as a phenomenon. This is one of those things that's not been acknowledged. So I don't know much about them.
Mm.
But when you start to look at these things in a pattern, you know, it kind of reminds me of the old, when I was a kid, I loved the Twilight Zone.
Oh, me too.
Yeah, there was a great classic Twilight Zone episode where these ETs come down and they're very friendly, and they say that their whole mission is to serve mankind.
Yeah.
And then in the very last scene, you know, after we've given them everything,
uh-huh.
you know, you see that that there's a book called To Serve Mankind, and it's a cookbook.
I love that one.
So
that's great.
So when we look at these people, particularly on the Republican side, they're just better at it.
Right.
You know, the Democrats can't do it as well. when we look at those people, we see the a basic parasitic class.
Uh-huh.
I'm not talking about the rank and file people that vote Republican. I'm talking about the people at the top
right.
who see this as an opportunity to simply line their own pockets and or gain political power by allowing others to line their pockets.
Yes.
And lining their pockets means looting of the Commonwealth.
Yep.
So,
and that comes out of
that's
our
how mind. They're serving us. They're serving us for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Yep.
Like a cookbook.
Yes, indeed.
So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Well, I love it. You are absolutely a wonderful person.
Well, thank you. And if people do want to get my Notes from the Trail newsletter or find out more about the Swami and schedule,
yes,
we're online at wakeuplaughing.com.
Okay.
And if you want to look at some of the political programs, well, actually, go to wakeuplaughing.com and we'll just send me a note and I will put you on the appropriate mailing list and we'll send you out Beyond the News, Notes on the Trail, and everything else that we have.
Oh, wonderful. Well, that's really great. Is there anything else that you can recommend that we can do? Or?
Well, there is...
a book to read? Or?
Well, let's see. there are so many books to read. Geez, I wish I could... I'll tell you one thing that is happening that I'm very excited about, and that is... David Swanson, who is, he's got the AfterDowningStreet.org website.
Okay.
They're really making a push for awareness in regards to impeachment.
Oh, good.
And making a big pitch to do this for July 4th,
oh.
Along with our Empty Envelopes campaign.
Okay.
There is a website called Vote to Impeach.
Okay.
And it says, turn the 4th of July into an Impeach Bush event.
Okay.
Swami says, bake impeach cobbler. And stand up and let people know why you're standing.
Wonderful.
So let's make the 4th of July about that. It's the least we can do to redress the wrong that we did by allowing it to happen in the first place.
Absolutely. It's never too late to stand up and claim our own power.
And you know the what the Swami says?
What's that?
Now is the time. You know why?
Why?
Because it's too late to do it sooner. That's why.
I love it. Steve, thank you so much for being my guest. I know you have to dash.
Well, thank you.
I just love you. You're terrific.
Okay. I look forward to meeting you on the outer net one of these days.
Yes, me too.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye, Steve.
May the force be with you.
Thank you. You too.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning in to our radio program. And we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.